I like marijuana, you like marijuana, we like marijuana too. A marijuana, 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 marijuana. I like marijuana.
Hello, Radioland. You are listening to the Medical Freedom Show. This is your host, Heather Martin. And today I am joined by medical freedom lawyer Daryl Kipnis. Welcome, Daryl.
Good afternoon, Heather. Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's my pleasure.
Thank you, Daryl. And it's a great pleasure to have you on the show as well. It's not every day I get to speak to a lawyer who works in medical freedom. Mostly I'm trying to explain the concept to people. So could you please tell me a little bit about your work, the kind of work you do as a medical freedom lawyer?
Medical freedom is kind of an offshoot of being a family law practitioner. A lot of times those instances come up in the context of family court actions where you have either different unmarried couples that have children that each have parental rights but can't agree on certain medical decision making for the children, and then also you have instances where you you get certain family members of those parents who don't agree with the choices made regarding their grandchildren. Sometimes whether it's a mother, whether it's an aunt or uncle, you know, another sibling, and they make a call over to New Jersey Division of Child Protection and Permanency to have. Clients investigated for what they believe is child abuse. That can lead to a whole host of issues, involved. But essentially what I'm here to do is I defend my clients' rights to medical freedom in the context of whatever action that they're involved in. Typically, it's a family court case. It could be in the context of custody. It comes up a lot or in other instances involving actions by the state. But that's the context in which medical freedom often comes up. Certainly also in estate planning, when you want to do an advance directive for healthcare, in other words, if you become incapacitated, you want another person that you want to designate that will respect your wishes and carry them out with respect to how you want to be treated in an instance where you become unresponsive or incapacitated. So it comes up in that context as well.
What kind of medical issues tend to be the more controversial, the kinds of issues that you're brought in about?
Vaccinations. You know, parents can choose, obviously, not to vaccinate their children in New Jersey, and they can get exemptions for public school, religious-based exemptions. I know that there is a push in the Democratic-controlled legislature to get rid of that. That's been talked about for several years. You know, different things like circumcision could come up for religious purposes, where, you know, when parents can't agree and children are unplanned and they come and parents can't agree, and maybe whether they're not together as a couple or whatever it is, that's when, you know, a lot of times the conflicts come. Over you know, choices for
right now. Some of our listeners may be listening right now and thinking, well, vaccines are essential, everybody has to get vaccines, but there's another side to that, right?
Yeah, there is. There's plenty of people out there that believe that there's potential health risks with vaccinations, and it really, my goal is to make sure that the client's rights are protected, that they are able to have their choices for their children protected by law, and they get the, you know, informed, that they get their choice of doctors, and they can choose what medical advice they believe is in the best interest of their children to follow, and that's who I advocate for.
Right. And circumcision, too, not often talked about issue, but it creates a permanent physical change in a person's body, and you know, it's done to people before the age of consent often.
Sure. In Jewish religion, certainly for boys after birth. You know, also comes up in a context of choosing different types of, you know, God forbid someone has cancer, and choosing different options to deal with that as well. You know, some people like to go out of country because there are certain things that are done. You can access in other countries which don't happen here. There's all different ways that, you know, those rights come up, and I'm here to advocate for liberty.
Yeah, I know it really comes up with comes to that. Essentially, it's a matter of basic human rights. My show is called Medical Freedom, and I got the name of the show from doing some research, and I discovered one of our founding fathers, Dr. Benjamin Rush, who was a signer of the Declaration of Independence. And early in this country's history, he was saying there needs to be a provision made for medical freedom. So just like you're making that provision for the religious freedom, we need to have the same thing in place in medicine to keep medicine from becoming the product of a certain class, that it's only accessible to a certain class, to a certain form of medicine. And we've seen that happen where the history of the AMA in our country kind of squeezed out other kinds of practice favoring allopathy overall. So that became what's known as only legitimate medicine, even though there's many kinds of modalities and treatments that are beneficial and helpful for people.
Sure.
So, you know, that's where I got that name from. And you mentioned before how we often have to fall upon those religious freedom provisions when now dealing with the medical system and trying to have a right of choice in medical treatment.
Right, but not everybody practices a religion. Some people just prefer to be able to make choices without having to say that there's a religious justification for it.
Right. I remember seeing on a vaccine exemption form from my college saying you have to have a religious exemption and it's specified. It cannot be a philosophical exemption.
Yeah.
So it cannot be based on your personal knowledge of medicine and immunity and your personal immune system, no matter how educated and knowledgeable you are about those things.
The option should be there, you know, as long as you have a doctor or, you know, someone that's willing to, if need be, to give a note saying that this is why that you made that choice. I don't see why we need to say it's for religious purposes.
And I'm really glad to have you on the show today talking about the issue of vaccine choice. It is something I've been wanting to talk about on the show. For the most part, I'll say most of the guests I've had on the show, probably about 90%, have been from the chronic pain community, both patients and doctors who treat people in chronic pain.
Sure.
Have you been seeing an influx in people looking for legal services because of the way they've been treated in regards to their chronic pain?
Chronic pain in New Jersey, medical marijuana exists, and it's why the program admittedly is very restricted right now. It's very difficult to get licensed to dispense it.
Okay, but actually, specifically, I'm talking about the millions of people in this country right now who are being cut off of their narcotic pain medicines that give them quality of life. It's an immense crisis in our country. Are you working with any people in those kinds of cases?
Not at this time, but that is a sort of an offshoot of what happened after, as you know, there's a huge opioid crisis.
Well, there's actually not. What there isn't a big issue of right now is that the government has for a long time profited on the war on drugs, mostly being the war on marijuana, which is now going to become legal in most states in our country. So they need to keep the war machine going. They want to have the prisons full of fresh, warm bodies. They want to have police forces kept at their current sizes. And so now they're taking another substance and they're demonizing it, just like they did with cannabis. You remember the Reefer Madness movie, you know,
sure.
One puff and you turn into a monster.
You're addicted forever, yep.
Yeah, and they're doing the same propaganda with the pain medicine.
But the unfortunate side effect of that is you have restrictions on the amount that you're able to get at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that that's really fair.
No, absolutely not.
You know, there's other ways to go about handling addiction and handling things of that nature. I don't think we do a good enough job with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's a lack of treatment options available for people, and the difficulty is identifying it, and this is the hard part. Coming forward when you have a problem, when someone's addicted to something, they have to recognize you have to be at a point where you want the help, because if you don't want it, it's very hard to progress.
Well, a lot of the people that are being labeled as addicts are those who cannot obtain the medicine from their doctor.
Right.
And when you get into drug use, it's really like comedian Bill Hicks said, it's not a war on drugs, it's a war on personal freedom.
It is.
Because what you put in your own body should really be your own choice.
Correct.
I mean,
correct.
If someone else can say, no, you can't put that substance in your body, you are owned, apparently, by some other person or entity.
Right, and that eliminates your rights as a natural person. And, you know, I'm all about individual, the whole, you can't be for limited government. You can't stand for limited government. But then say, no, I want to make decisions about what people can and can't do with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense. And politically, as most people know, I was a 2018 candidate for Congress in New Jersey. And individual liberty was a huge part of my campaign. It's what I've always believed in my whole life. And I'm a limited government guy. I'm an individual freedom
mm-hmm.
guy. And, you know, to me, I don't see how you can be for limited government and then say you want to control what people do.
Right.
Doesn't make any sense to me.
No, not at all. But before the show, I was asked on the Facebook page, someone asked when I posted my announcement that you were going to be on the show, someone asked me, why doesn't he represent chronic pain patients? And I didn't know how to answer, because I wanted to ask you, well, do you represent chronic pain patients?
I do. I mean, I haven't had a case where, you know, somebody's had an issue where they're a chronic pain patient and they've had, you know, been blocked from getting what they needed
mm-hmm.
or experienced any kind of issue. Knock on wood, no one's had those problems, at least in my experience. But if they do, you know, I certainly invite them to call me and I will be happy to discuss helping them.
Because many people who suffer chronic pain, now, I agree that the legalization and the availability of cannabis is a wonderful thing. However, it's not a panacea. It does not work for absolutely everybody. There are some people who it doesn't touch their chronic pain, but if they're in a state with a medical marijuana program, the system just wants to take them off of the working medicine and put them onto the cannabis. Have you experienced any cases like that?
No, I haven't experienced any cases like that. Personally, I know it does happen. I know it's not for everybody, but there are people that do use it and have chronic conditions, and it helps them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, anything that you know, helps, it doesn't harm, it's not harmful, it's controlled, it's, you know, there's a decent amount of regulation involved in it, but because it has to be. But I think eventually you're going to see an expansion in availability of medical marijuana, medical cannabis, and it also will involve people getting, you know, the iron grip off of it, where certain
mm-hmm.
select fortunate few have control over the supply due to their political status. And I think, you know, you'll see once those options to dispense become more widely available, I think you're going to see corresponding with that a broader spectrum of options for people to choose from, even that don't include that.
Well, I know from having lived out in Washington a few years ago that the accessibility, the availability, the variety of products that are out there, there's just nothing like it on the eastern half of the United States. We've got a long way to go from getting to there. However, we really have a problem with this government that is so, it's got a drug dependency. It's got a war on drug dependency. You know, maybe you saw that story from Tennessee that they were concerned that they would have to euthanize all the police dogs if cannabis was legalized. I mean, it's just an indicator of how many outrageous scenarios are imagined when it comes to...
And that's the media narrative. I mean, that's what I like to call
it. Well, there is the media narrative, but right now the media narrative is playing up opioid epidemic when you have, first of all, you have all of the resources that people might have had for getting clean product are being taken away with all the drug busts. So then you have only these black market channels where, you know, you could go out on the street and buy heroin, but if you probably were to take it to a lab, you'd probably find a lot of other chemicals in there that are not supposed to be there. Might not even have any of the actual product that you're hoping to get. So, you know, they're saying, well, people are overdosing. It's so easy to overdose on heroin. Well, it's easy to have problems with anything when there's no quality control.
There's no control in place, right. And that's why I think with legalization of marijuana for recreational purposes, that's why I think it's important for that to happen, at least in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
I think that should be a state's rights issue. I think each state should be able to decide. When I ran for Congress, I campaigned on removing cannabis from the federal CDS list and put it out to every state. Every state should be able to have a referendum. Let the people of each state decide, is this something that we want here? They can make that choice. It shouldn't be banned at the federal
mm-hmm.
level.
And it works. And for a lot of people who are on opiates, it works very well in tandem. And many people are being denied that combination because of the current political atmosphere.
And pharmaceutical companies have everything to do with that.
And insurance companies.
Although they're limited in what they can directly contribute.
Well, they control quite a lot.
You
can go to a doctor and the course of treatment that makes logical sense, the doctor says, well, sorry, we can't do that. The insurance company insists we go this route.
Right.
And that's happening more and more. And another thing with this platform of medical freedom and what I'm striving for and what I think a provision for medical freedom would provide is that these insurance companies cannot dictate a person's medical treatment. That really should not be tolerated. It should not be.
It shouldn't. And you know, and this is how they get away with it. In New Jersey, at least on a state level, insurance companies are banned from making contributions directly to candidates. However, in New Jersey and across the country, but especially here, we have a big problem with dark money, as it's known. There's been a lot of chatter in the news lately about Governor Murphy, who had a group called New Direction, I forget the name of the exact group. I'm not sure if it's New Direction New Jersey or something, but there's a name of it. People were able to donate massive amounts of money to this that's not regulated by any campaign finance.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially this group, through a double-blind sort of system where now Governor Murphy, couldn't control any of its content that they published, they would run television ads supporting his policies
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. And it came out in the context of PSE&G, the utility company. They got caught making a $55,000 contribution to one of these, they were intended it to go to a dark money group where no one would know that they made it, but they wrote it to a similar group that was the type of organization that has to report their campaign finance donors to the state, and they tried to take the check back, but the word got out that they wrote a $55,000 check as a thank you after they spent something close to $25 million lobbying for a $300 million, I believe it is, annual subsidy to keep nuclear plants open throughout the state. So, and they tried to do this. They tried to sweep it under the rug to get the influence the legislature.
We have 30 seconds left of this segment, so we have to wrap up, but we'll get back on that topic on our very next segment. This is the Medical Freedom Show with Heather Martin. My guest today is medical freedom lawyer Daryl Kipnis, and we'll be in the next segment talking about dark money. Hope to see you then. Hello, and welcome to the Medical Freedom Show. This is your host, Heather Martin. Today, I am joined with medical freedom lawyer, Daryl Kipnis. Daryl, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much again, once again, for having me, Heather.
You're very welcome. So, Daryl, I'm sorry I had to cut you off on the last segment. I want to rewind a little bit. We were talking about the influence of insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies in the medical practice. And we were talking about dark money and about some things going down in your neighborhood of New Jersey.
Yes. So anyway, what this is there are 501c, I think it's a 501c4 social welfare groups that don't have to disclose their donors currently. And a lot of those monies are used for political purposes. It's a way to get around restrictions on campaign finance. Insurance companies are believed to give a lot of money to these groups. Basically, anybody who wants to preserve the status quo and keep the current crop of politicians in power typically gives to these groups. It having been a challenger for two legislative offices myself, I know how difficult it is to defeat an incumbent, because once they're in, you know, the power brokers of the world want to have their preferred fixers in power that keep things the way that they are and maybe make things a little bit better for them, but not so much for you and I. And dark money is one of the big ways that they get it done in New Jersey. And I think what we're seeing now is a lot of people coming forward in both parties that are opposed to this now, because the public really is getting keyed into it and seeing that this is just, you know, with a PSE&G example of what they spent on lobbying to get a huge taxpayer-funded subsidy, you know, basically more than 10 times the money each year what they paid out initially just lobbying. And then they sent a $55,000 thank you to this dark money, what they thought was a dark money fund, but was actually a reportable one because they got a word wrong. It had a very similar name. It's actually controlled by the same people, similar people. And, you know, they got outed because they did that. And now that's going to be a big focal point of the news here as we move forward. But those are the kinds of power structures in place which keep the establishment in and make it very difficult to advance the cause of medical freedom.
Yeah, definitely. And to kind of reiterate for some of the listeners who are joining us now and didn't hear our first segment, we're talking a bit about how now you go to a doctor and your treatment is being dictated by the insurance companies.
Correct.
You know, now it seems the MO is to put people who are completely undiagnosed straight into physical therapy and have them do 6 weeks of physical therapy before they can get any imaging, any diagnostics work done at all.
I think what we need to see, and a lot of that's driven by the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, which puts all kinds of requirements and things in place. I think what we need to see is more freedom in how people pay for healthcare. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to move more towards a performance-based model for healthcare rather than a per-use base. In other words, doctors and hospitals and so on and so forth should be compensated for the results that they get.
Mm-hmm.
How healthy people are. In other words,
they
should be paid if somebody doesn't have to use a lot of care during the year, or if people stay healthy, they should get compensated.
Right now, the current system pays more if the people are sicker.
Yeah, if they're sicker and they keep going, you get paid per pop. And I think that's what drives it. I know that's what drives the cost of it up. And I think that when we look at how to reform healthcare, we got to do something in the country, clearly, because the current status is just way too unaffordable for people. And that's why, because it's great for insurance companies and it's great for the hospitals. If you look at, even in New Jersey, if you look at who sits on the boards of directors of a lot of hospitals that are public hospitals or quasi-public hospitals, you'll see that they're very politically connected people. A lot of them are real estate developers, sometimes even religious leaders. You know, there's all different kinds of people that get on the boards of hospitals, and their job is to help the hospitals make money, essentially. Yeah. You know, and they, whether they say that they're a liaison to this community or you know, this, or people that work in this type of business, they bring the hospital board. And at the end of the day, they're there to help the hospital make money. And I think that there needs to be, hospitals do deserve to make money, obviously. They perform a very important function. We need them. But people need to have more freedom, too. And I think that when we look at how to reform healthcare, we got to look more towards moving towards a performance-based model that emphasizes good results, keeping people healthy, you know, not having to show up all the time and not getting repeated treatment. And I think once we sort of, you know, move forward in terms of real progress and how it's funded and how much people pay.
And the amount of time that people have to spend waiting in the current system, like in some instances, like you can't call a specialist and make an appointment. They'll only take you through another doctor's referral.
Which is like,
but it could take you 3 months to get in to see that doctor, then another 3 months to get the referral. In the meantime, here's 6 months going by, you're not getting treatment.
Right, and that's one of the huge problems with socialized medicine throughout the world. You know, a lot of people talk how great single payer would be. There's people waiting for doctors for a really long time, and then in the UK you have cases like baby Charlie Gard, where they said, no, we're not going to, we're under no circumstances are we going to do anything to see if this kid can live. So you don't want that level of control by government over healthcare. I think they got to take a step back and look at a more sustainable way of letting people have more choice in where their money goes. HSAs are a great idea. Maybe we could do something, you know, along the lines of that, but there needs to be a performance-based payment.
I had a guest on the show a while back, and if anyone's interested, the information is linked on the Facebook page of my show. I've got a Facebook page for Medical Freedom where I post archives of all of the past shows and just other information related to my guests or the topics discussed. And he was working with a group that was doing kind of like a healthcare co-op sort of thing.
Yeah, there's a lot
group
of
buy-in.
There's Liberty Health Share. There's all kinds of, there's a lot of profession groups because there was the exemption for Obamacare for religious purposes. But I don't necessarily think these, like, again, it doesn't have to be religious necessarily. It could just be this is, you know, paying into a cooperative that works the same way that they, you know, negotiate things with doctors and providers and make payments as an alternative to traditional insurance. The more choices that people have, the more competition there is, and competition leads to performance like anything else.
Absolutely.
When there's no competition, there's no performance. Everyone knows that. That's
right. And there's currently so many barriers in place to practicing. And also, I mean, so many people like myself and probably yourself and many others, we have a vested interest in our health. We like to do the research and like to move forward with the things that are proper and correct for us. And it's very frustrating to come up against where certain resources, you have to go through the system and then they tell you you have to do things that might be detrimental to your health in order to get the thing you need. Like going through physical therapy if you have an undiagnosed condition.
Yeah, and you know, that doesn't necessarily lead to, you know, where you need to be. It could be harmful in certain instances. But there's such a rigid structure in place where you don't get to point A and you don't get to point C unless you've gone through B first.
And so much learned helplessness.
Yeah, it is.
I think there's a lot of learned helplessness and that people just accept this, that it's the way the way it is and therefore the way it should be.
Right.
And they don't understand that this is something that was predicted at the formation of our country. And that there was a voice of reason there saying we have to do something to provide that people can have a voice in their medical treatment. I mean, how many people have I talked to who go into a hospital or a healthcare situation and say something specifically like, please don't give me this drug, I have bad reactions to it, and then they're given that drug?
People have, this is the most important thing I could say, people have a choice every year, no matter where you live, during every election, to vote for someone that is not in the pockets of lobbyists, that is just a regular person that's trying to, you know, do right by the community. They have a chance to do that in so many different instances, but those people unfortunately don't win because people don't get out and vote is the biggest mm-hmm. one. And the other thing is, it's the money. It's the campaign finance.
Always seems like the candidates are chosen before the election.
Yeah, well, gerrymandering has a lot to do with that because there's, in every district where there's above a county level, where there's towns that are selected that make up the voting pool, those towns will always have, or those groupings or districts will always have more of one party's registered voter than another, and the election's decided in terms of who's going to put resources in, who's going to donate, who's based on those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what partisan gerrymandering has to go. It's one of those things which depresses participation in elections. It discourages good people from running
mm-hmm.
for office.
Well, I've even talked like to local politicians. You know, I'm in New York, obviously, not
sure.
New Jersey, but we're neighbors, similar
yep.
states, and
mm-hmm.
more ways than we might want to confess up to. But anyway, like, I even had opportunities to talk to some of the candidates, and I found with them, like most other people, when it comes really to the plight of people dealing with the healthcare system, and really particularly those in chronic pain who are just being forced into suicide in record numbers,
I'm so sorry
here. They're so ignorant about it. Like, it's a revelation that, oh my gosh, morphine comes from a flower. It's not a petrochemical.
Yeah.
You know, we're again demonizing a natural herbal medicine.
Right.
And if we really have an opiate crisis or a heroin crisis, well, why aren't we legalizing opium so people can scrape sap out of their home gardens and not have to buy anything on the street from drug cartels?
Well, every time, or, you know, making it so that it can be regulated, so that you, if you are buying it, you're getting a pure product. I think we need to see how that works out
mm-hmm.
with cannabis first. I think that's, you know, more of an, if you had to pick one of something to make offered to the public and out for general consumption and purchasable in stores and things like that, I think that will be the thing to try first. And we'll see
mm-hmm.
what goes from there. I think there needs to be more, you know, people need to be open towards embracing liberty, voting for liberty,
mm-hmm.
Instead of saying, I want the same old every year because, you know, I'm a Democrat or I'm a Republican.
What would you say to a listener who's listening to our show, who might be in chronic pain, who's had their quality of life really decimated by the loss of their medicine? They've been told to use the cannabis, they've used it, and they get high, but they can't get out of bed. What do you say to a person like that? Is there a way, is there a certain kind of lawyer they can go to? Is there a certain kind of...
Well, it all depends on what kind of situation they're in. I mean, does it involve a dispute with their insurance carrier who doesn't want to cover a particular course of treatment that they've researched or that they've received some advice as something they'd like to pursue? Is there something else that's preventing them from pursuing what they want to pursue? And, you know, everybody...
Well, let me give you one specific situation. I'll share with you my own story. I'm the partner of a chronic pain patient. He was injured about 20 years ago in an auto accident. And I've been with this person for the past couple decades. I've seen many, many surgeons tell him he's not a good candidate for surgery. There's nothing they can do for him. And he's tried every alternative, acupuncture, acupressure, TENS units, yoga, you name it. Even the cannabis program. We moved out to the state of Washington in 2013. It was meant to be a one-way trip, never coming back to New York. We were trying to get out of here. And when we got there, there was no doctor that would even take him on to continue treating him with the pain medicine. So his pain medicine went from being what was adequate to treat his pain to being cut in half of that. And we ultimately had to leave all of our worldly possessions and come all the way back cross country to go back to his doctor. That doctor was forced into an early retirement because of all the regulations he had to deal with. Yeah, and sure. My partner still is nowhere near the level of medicine he should be on right now. I mean, he used to do photography, work in the garden. We used to be able to go out on social visits, and all of that is gone now.
Now you have the ability, and people in those in that situation, I would hope most of them would have the ability to research, do their own research as to what might be out there, maybe in another country.
We've actually been looking at other countries, and this situation is global.
Yeah.
It is global.
There needs to be more choice. Mm-hmm. I think that in order for choice to open up, people need to, one, support pro-liberty candidates for office. They need to support pro-liberty legislators, those who make the laws. Mm-hmm. That's who they need to support, typically at the state and federal level. State legislatures and Congress would have the most ability to affect medical policy. And to advocate, either if you can't run for office yourself, do what you can on the grassroots level to help somebody get elected who shares those views. And can do it. I mean, it is always possible for anybody running for anything to win, no matter how difficult the pundits and the prognosticators say.
Well, I mean, I agree with what you're saying to an extent, but as a long-term third-party voter, I can see where it's kind of some idealism. And I think rather than waiting and hoping that our vote is going to throw the right person in office. Now, certainly we should keep doing that, like you say. Yeah. We should keep voting our conscience. Well, it's not a horse race. We're not trying to pick who's going to win. We want to pick who should win, and a lot of people don't get that.
No, they don't.
They want to play it like it's a horse race, and, you know, there's no pot to win.
That's how the money in politics goes.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I'm thinking we need even more grassroots action, and just
I think you do, and I think the more awareness that you can raise for things, and
mm-hmm.
everybody has the ability to insert themselves into the media news cycle.
Yeah,
with social media right mm-hmm. now, people have never had this power before, and they have it now, and it gets more prevalent with each passing day. And my only advice is use it.
Yeah, very true.
Use it, get out there, get your voice heard.
Mm-hmm.
The more persistent you are, you know, the Rolling Stone gathers moss, as they say, and, you know, others may take up and say, yeah, I agree with this, and though they got to hit the share button on it, and then it gets, even more people see it, and then even more people see it, and then everyone says, okay, wait a minute, either we or someone we know is in a position mm-hmm. where we can't find relief for the pain that they're in. And now, you know, we have people starting a conversation saying, hey, let's make this a priority. Let's make this something that if somebody running for office wants our vote, they're going to have to be on board with this. And that's how you influence policy mm-hmm. towards that. It's one person has the ability to get it rolling. And that's what I would suggest. Yeah, it's a little idealistic. I get it. But, you know, You have that ability out there. What the mm-hmm. results, whatever.
And even the politicians who are in the office right now,
right?
You know, it never hurts to pester.
No, I mean, even if they ignore it, I mean, you'll have it on record that they mm-hmm. ignored it.
Yep, and maybe the press coverage of your activities, like
there's pro tests, you know, all the time.
We are almost out of time for this segment. So just want to remind our listeners, you're listening to WGXC ACRA. This is the Medical Freedom Radio Show with your host, Heather Martin. My guest today is Daryl Kipnis, medical freedom lawyer.
Once again, Heather, thank you so much for having me on. It's my pleasure.
Thank you so much for being on the show. And it's just so uplifting to talk to someone who's working for medical freedom in a legal capacity. Thank you again.
Yeah, sure. It's my pleasure. You know, it's all goes to, you know, your rights to liberty and prosperity and life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness there. That all ties in.
Welcome, listeners, to the Medical Freedom Show. This is your host, Heather Martin. Today, I am joined by medical freedom lawyer, Daryl Kipnis. Daryl, thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you, Heather. It is absolutely my honor and pleasure to be on the show once again. I'm proud to join you.
Thank you so much. And so I understand you had a victory today. Are you able to talk about that a little?
Yes, without naming names, because I can't.
Right.
I represented a family who was being investigated by New Jersey DCP&P. They're a homeschooling family. They have made certain choices with their children, and unfortunately, somebody didn't agree with those choices and had the state contacted on them. New Jersey has a very broad discretion given to homeschoolers. I was able to work out an arrangement with DCP&P today, which will keep the children in their home with their loving parents where they belong, hopefully resolve the matter within a matter of days.
So I'm just trying to understand. So somebody complained that family was homeschooling and not sending their kids to school?
And other things. I mean, I can't really get into the specifics of it, but DCP&P was contacted by others who took issue with what was going on. But, you know, the matter is on its way to resolution after having appeared in court today.
Uh-huh.
If you find yourself in that situation, call an attorney immediately and make sure your rights are protected. If you're a homeschooler, you have rights. You have certain rights with respect to how you want to make the medical decisions for your children, and you want to make sure that your rights are protected, and that you have someone in your corner. You may not understand how to navigate the waters. I have a lot of experience helping people do that, and I was proud to be able to help some really wonderful people today.
Yeah.
Get a resolution to that type of issue, which no one should really have to experience in their life. It's such a terrible thing.
Right. A lot of people who are aware of the issues around vaccines and aware of the potential for harm that they have find themselves in a situation where they have to do homeschooling because of the requirements by the schools. And it seems like nowadays kids are facing more vaccines than they were generations before.
Right. Like I said, the drug companies lobby and finance the campaigns of people in office who want to keep things that way, who want to keep that the train flowing of money, even when, you know, if people have immunity, you know, maybe a doctor could say, you know what? I don't want to give this vaccine.
You know, what's really interesting to me is if you take an animal to a veterinarian, my experience with veterinarians, you know, maybe I just have enlightened veterinarians, but when it comes to the topic of vaccines, they're very guarded. They're like, vaccines are something we have to go into very carefully. We have to space them out to give the immune system a chance to adapt, right? And if there might be a pre-existing immunity, so they want to check for a titer.
Titer, correct.
So, and a titer is a test to see if the individual already has an immunity to a certain illness and therefore doesn't even need a vaccine, will not benefit from a vaccine. But on the other hand, I've heard of people being forced out of their pediatricians for wanting to have space between vaccines. It's like, you're going to take all of them today, or we're not going to deal with you.
There are some doctors that are very good about it, that will, you know, that are open to spacing them out and more respectful. And then there are others that are sort of old school, that, you know, do it that, their way. A lot of another source of issues, you know, they call it medical kidnapping.
Yeah.
You know, at a hospital, you mm-hmm. know, when a baby is born, a lot of times new parents get besieged with all these personnel coming and saying, "Oh, we have to do this on the baby. If you refuse to do this, we're calling DIFAS. We're calling Child Protection Services.
Right.
Yes, we're calling DCPP." And, you know, it's a lot of times if you're in that situation, call an attorney. Call me. You know, my number is 732-595-5.
Okay. We can't advertise on our radio station.
Understand. But, advertising my services. But that's
We can find all the links in Facebook.
Correct.
Want our listeners to go to the Medical Freedom page on Facebook, you know, and give us a like and just read all about our past shows, our past guests, the one who's doing the new insurance platform that I interviewed a while back. All that information is there. It's very interesting doing the show, how I'm becoming connected to this community of activists and change makers who are really doing some phenomenal work. I'm glad that you brought up the subject of medical kidnapping, because another aspect of medical kidnapping that I'm concerned of is now, let's call it what it is, the rehab industry.
Right.
We have a rehab industry, and as you were mentioning, insurance companies and their lobbyists and drug companies are really influencing the political field, and so are the rehab industries.
Correct.
I think it's like I don't want to name names because I don't have the facts here in front of me, but some politician who's well known is connected with the rehab industries and is also really beating the opiate epidemic war drums. But that is becoming a big industry, and I'm seeing people even clamoring for medical kidnapping, stating that people who are quote-unquote addicts need to be really abducted into these rehab clinics and not allowed to leave until they're quote-unquote clean, which I think is a really disgusting term because you're calling people dirty based on what they...
Based on a
personal choice.
Yeah, it's a choice or whatever it becomes. And like I said, with addiction, you
and it's not always a sickness. Like, I really believe that addiction is over-assigned and over-diagnosed in our society because I'm finding a lot of people who use opiates even illegally are getting a benefit out of it. And historically, these medicines were used to treat a much wider range of the human condition than what they are now. So, right. For example, people with certain kinds of depression or bipolar disorder or, you know, any kind of physical, physiological or psychological kind of issue, if they responded well to this medicine, they could use it. I was at an event a couple years ago where a mother was talking about her son who died of a heroin overdose, and she mentioned in the course of describing him that he had some kind of depression, a psychological disorder, and every time the doctors would give him medicine, the medicine would make him worse, and then I quote, "But when he was high, he was perfectly normal." So, you know, instead of someone jumping on like, "Hey, breakthrough, we found something that works for you. Let's figure out your dosage. Let's get you clean substance to work with. Let's work with this." Instead, this young man had to go out on the street and God knows what he purchased and what ultimately killed him.
Right.
So I think a lot of people who might be seen as recurring addicts are people who are going through the system because it's legally required. This is the way our culture's set up. This is the expectation. But when they get out there, they're like, you know, the heck with that. I want what's going to make me feel good. And they go out and they get it.
Right. They do. And, you know, I think we got to evaluate what we keep away from people and how to do it responsibly.
And I also find that people who really do suffer addiction in a way where using the substance is more negative than good for them, they don't have any denial about it. They say, yeah, I'm addicted. I want to get off of this. I'm struggling with the withdrawals or whatever it is.
The ones that recognize that are the ones that stand the best chance of getting off of it.
And they're the ones who don't really need it. Otherwise, they would keep going back to it. But now what they're doing by setting up the situation where so many people who are getting their medicine for their chronic pain from their doctors are now facing live in intolerable pain, kill myself, or buy it off the street.
Well, that's not acceptable.
That's the situation right now.
And like I said, the way to affect changes in policy is at the grassroots.
Mm-hmm.
That's...
However, what's going on right now is that the people who are being targeted are the people who cannot get out and protest. You've got people, who, especially when they've lost their medicine, they can't get out of bed. So you're talking about millions of bedridden people.
Right, and that's why it's so important to have people that can be your voice.
Mm-hmm.
Have advocates out there for those that can't.
And it's a real struggle because, you know, you talk to people, even people like you, who say, oh, but there's an opiate epidemic. I mean, people just hear this message and they take it like fact. It's very Orwellian, you know, just keep repeating a message and eventually people take it as fact.
I'm not suggesting that there isn't an issue. There is. There's a lot of prescription painkillers that can cause a lot of, especially in the sports world. You hear a lot about it. I mean, it's not everybody, but there's a few athletes that get addicted to oxycodone or some of the other ones, OxyContin.
I would steer away from using the word addicted because I would want to ask an individual who's using them, why are you using what is the benefit you're getting out of it?
I say that because that's what they get diagnosed as. It doesn't mean it means what some doctor says is the issue, but a lot of times you don't hear from these people, you know, how they feel about it or what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Right. You hear about it when they're a celebrity. Don't have it with me right at the moment, but I have an article printed out at home. And it was from I guess he's like the originator. I would say the lead singer. But I think he's kind of a solo musician and the band is kind of a comic. But have you ever heard of Gorillaz?
Yes.
The group,
yes.
Gorillaz?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, the guy who's kind of like the head of that, the British guy, he was forced to go into a rehab. And the article was really interesting because it's talking about like, well, I wasn't really having a bad experience with the heroin. It was helping me in the music. It was opening up my creativity. It was putting me in the zone. And the only thing you could say that was really negative about it was isolating. But then again, it's only isolating because of the way it is in our culture right now. It's not something you can just go out and say.
It's malum in se is what they say. It's mal it out because malum in prohibitum. It's bad because it's prohibited because you can't have it.
Yeah,
it's bad, not because it's bad in and of itself. It's bad because, and that's what I think with cannabis at least you're going to see a mm-hmm. breakthrough. I predict that it will be legal in New Jersey probably within the next 2 years.
Oh, we're keeping our fingers crossed.
Yeah, I think that it'll happen. You know, there's proposals back and forth. At the federal level, you know, I'd like to see that happen too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how it's so volatile and so unpredictable what's happening in Washington right now. I don't expect a lot to get done in Congress in the next 2 years, given that there is a one party controls one house and the other controls the other.
Right.
And they seem to have zero ability to want to work together on anything. More so than any point in history. So, you know, I don't, for that type of a sea change to happen, you need at least some high level horse trading going on politically, which I don't know that we're going to see, but at least in New Jersey, I'm hopeful that something will happen within the next 2 years and that we can start seeing the benefits of that.
Yeah, Likewise, same here. There's rumors of it being legalized here in New York, but I haven't. I'm not holding my breath.
In the city, it's been decriminalized to a degree, but the next.
I think it's been technically decriminalized. Technically. There for quite a while.
The ultimate thing that has to happen, the key is to get it off the federal CDS list, mm-hmm. which would stop places like Colorado having to go through all these hoops to control the banking behind it, because technically if you deposit the money from marijuana into a federally insured bank account, it becomes a whole, you know, nightmare of money laundering and things like that. It's really crazy, you know, the legalities behind it. But that's the step that will, you know, once the money is freed up where you can put it in banks now, I think that'll be the start to seeing it legalized elsewhere. Mm-hmm. In the country.
Yeah, they started a medical program here in New York, but the actual product that one is allowed to purchase, you know, it's not actual bud or... It's like a distillation with propylene glycol. So, you know, there's like extra chemicals that a body doesn't really need obligatorily go along with it.
It needs to be in a form where it would help people. But different things work for different people. So
I know. But they're so... addicted to regulation in this part of the country.
Regulation is how companies make money.
Mm-hmm.
It screens out the competition and makes and gives them the monopoly of it. And when there's no competition, as I said before, there's no performance. If you want to see performance, there's got to be competition.
Absolutely. I think in overall, our society stands on a precipice of major change. I think to really move forward, like you say, not only does our whole medical system need to change, but I think even our whole economic system.
Or the participation in government, I think you're going to have to see a lot of changes to campaign mm-hmm. finance. You got to get rid of the dark money's got to go. There needs to be more electoral reforms to secure the integrity of the voting process. I think people should be entitled to a written printout of what their vote was from a voting machine in case there ever becomes an issue. Happens. People should know exactly how their vote was recorded in a machine. I think that there needs to be more ways to
more checks and balances.
Or just remove. There's a political elite class that keeps things the way that they are, and that's a barrier that needs to be broken.
Right.
And they use both parties. People wear the stripes of the party that has the more voters in the area and in order to maintain the power of the mm-hmm. establishment. And they may not necessarily, there are Democrats that say that they're Democrats, but really have little in common with what people would think of the Democrats are. There's a lot of places in New Jersey like that. Same as Republicans. There's a lot of people that say they're Republicans, but really don't align a lot with Republicans elsewhere. It's just they wear the stripes of whoever has more registered voters in their district, and that's what they are, because then it's easy mode to get elected. And that, I think, is something that people need to look beyond the party. They need to look at the person. And people need to pay more attention to that rather than just what the media tells them 24/7.
Oh, absolutely. I think we're a little too hung up on parties here.
Yeah, it's not healthy. It's not.
No, it's not.
You know, the intensity of the hatred that you see from this one and that mm-hmm. one, it's got to stop at some point.
Yeah.
Say, hey, wait a minute. What about us? What's important in our lives? What's important in mm-hmm. our family's lives? Not what we're told and is important. What do we think is important? And I think that's the key to seeing more medical freedom policies being enacted is people need to feel more free themselves to make decisions based on what they think is right versus on what the media and what the mm-hmm. educational, what academia says, what Hollywood says, what sports says, what culture says. You know, freedom comes when people have free thought.
Yeah. Absolutely. Daryl Kipnis, thank you so much for being on the Medical Freedom Show today.
It's my pleasure, Heather. Thank you so much.
We have 1 minute left to the segment. Do you have a website or any resources you'd like to share with our listeners?
www.kipnislawoffices.com is my firm website.
Kipnislawoffices.com.
Right, and you can look up Kipnis Law Offices on Facebook.
Okay.
If you need to reach out to me, that's my business. Mm-hmm. You know, and feel free to reach out. The numbers are on there. The emails are on there if anybody needs to get a hold of me. I am not running for any public office.
Not yet.
Not that, you know, I have no plans to as of right now. Never say never.
Right.
But I have no plans as of right now.
I like your platform. I'll say that much.
Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate it. Okay.
Well, thank you very much. And thank you, listeners, for joining us on the Medical Freedom Show. We'll be back next month to talk about these issues further.
Take care, Heather.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.